And we're holding on page 20 in Ayurveda, or you might have it labeled as page 172, five lines from the bottom. We're in the middle of talking about a series of machlokas in Rav and Shmuel. The first one had to do with the Mishnah, where it says, Ketzav ma'abrin asa'orim, and there was a machlokas, whether the correct version of the word is ma'abrin with an ayin or ma'abrin with an aleph, coming from the Shurish, respectively, uber as in pregnant, or aver as in a limb. So then that led the Gemara into discussing a number of other machlokas in, where Rav and Shmuel argue on the meanings of sukkim. So we had a couple of them. We had about the Maris Machpelah, and we had about the names Amraphel and Nimrod, which was his primary name and which was a nickname. So the next one, the passage says, "Vayakum Melech Chodesh Amitzrayim," a new king arose over Mitzrayim. So again, Rav and Shmuel argue what this means. Chadam Chodesh Mamish. One says means it was actually a new king, or some Foshim want to say that maybe it means a new dynasty, whatever. Vachadam Shnischad Shugzeroisav. The other one says it means same old king, but now he was making new gzeros. And each of them gets it as follows. Mando am chodesh mamish tachtiv chodesh. The one who says he was actually new is because the pasuk says he was new. Or mando amish nischad shugzeroisav. The one who says it's because he made new gzeros. Midoloitziv vayomos vayimloch. He says because otherwise the pasuk should have said vayomos, the previous one died, and then vayimloch, the new one became king. So the fact that it doesn't say that suggests that it was the same one. So the Gemara asks, Lamando Amish Nischad Shugzeroisav, Hoksiv Asher La Yoda Es Yosef. But according to that opinion, how does it explain the fact that he says in the pasuk he didn't know Yosef? If he was the same old king, of course he knew Yosef, and he knew what Yosef had done. So my Asher La Yoda Es Yosef, David Domi Commander La Yoda Le Yosef Kwal. He acted according to that opinion as though he didn't know Yosef at all, but of course he knew good and well what Yosef had accomplished. This is another one of those ones that Eva talks about in that sikha we mentioned yesterday from Chelek Tesayin of, it's another example where Rav goes according to the word itself and Shmuel goes according to the context. The word chodesh means new, therefore Rav says, by the way, that Eva points out over there based on Udi Svarim, that when you have these kinds of things, the Gemara will say, Rav or Shmuel, Chad Omar this and Chad Omar that, generally we should assume, unless we have evidence to the contrary, that it means that Rav said the first one and Shmuel said the second. Sometimes the Gemara will actually go and try to figure out which one said which, and sometimes it will conclude that the one mentioned second said the first one, and vice versa, but generally speaking, by default, we should assume that the first one is the first mandama and the second is the second. So, what? Say what? It's a sikha. So the particular sikha we were talking about over here about Rav and Shmuel's shittis is in the beginning of Chelek Tes Zayin, first sikha of Shmos. I don't remember if it's in that same sikha or a different one, where that ever talks about that in general, a lot of times when we have chad omer this and chad omer that, generally we should assume that it means the first one, the first mentioned one said the first thing, and the second one said the second. Anyway, so here we're saying, then again, so that ever says, you see that Rav holds according to the plain meaning of the word, it says chodesh, therefore it has to mean new, whereas Shmuel is looking at the larger context, since again, as it says, Asher la yoda es Yosef, and since the pasuk is making a point, why Bechlal did have to mention a point of there being a new king anyway? It should just go straight to the fact that he's making Zerus. So therefore, that suggests more that it means the same one, and he pretended not to know Yosef, and he's there, and so forth. And at the end of that sikha, the Rebbe also talks about an interesting point that you see from that also, it says that Rav and Shmuel are also arguing, we know that Paray was guilty of acting wrongly, Ben Adam Lamakim, in that he declared himself a god, and also Ben Adam Lachavera in the way that he treated the Jews, which one, Rav and Shmuel essentially are arguing, which one was worse? If you say that he was, if you say like Rav that he was a new king, then in a way, the fact that he treated the Jewish people so badly, in a way is not as bad. Because the fact is, yeah, it's true, he's new, he wasn't around in Yosef's times, he only knows of it second or third hand or whatever, so therefore that exonerates him a little bit. On the other hand, then, what's he doing? Declaring himself a god. If you say that he was the same old king, then you find that Yaakov showed him tremendous respect by Yivarech Yaakov as Paray, and so forth. So then you might have an excuse to say, you know what, if Yaakov is treating me with such deference, then I have the right to declare myself a god. So then you could say, if he was the same old king, then he has that right, but then it makes him much more guilty against the Jewish people, because why is he ignoring and pretending not to know Yosef? So it comes down to a machlokas, which is worse, the Ben Adam Lamakim component according to Rav, or the Ben Adam Lachaveri component according to Shmuel. Okay. The Gemara goes on to discuss, there's a piece over here that's not here in Ein Yaakov, where the Gemara continues, gets back to this discussion about the word ma'abrin, whether it's ma'abrin with an ayin or ma'abrin with an aleph. And the Gemara mentions that, that Rebbe actually asked among the Chachamim of his times, and they had different versions of it. So the Gemara mentions Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So now the Gemara is going to mention also that Rabbi Yochanan learned about this from Rabbi Oshia. But Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Yudches Yom Gidalti Eitzer of Oshia Berevi. I spent 18 days growing and then growing great in Torah by Rabbi Oshia Berevi. Berevi, by the way, doesn't mean the son of Rebbe. It's a title that's used here and there in Shas for exceptionally great Talmid Chachamim. So Rabbi Yochanan wants us to know that Rabbi Oshia is a very, very great Talmid Chacham. So I spent 18 days learning by him. All I learned from him during those 18 days is one thing in our Mishnayos, meaning the Mishnayos, the regular Mishnayos, as opposed to the Gemara is going to say, as opposed to the Gemara is going to mention soon, for example, Brisas. The one thing was Ketzed Ma'abrin, it's Sa'arim Ba'alef, that the word in our Mishnah, Ketzed Ma'abrin, is supposed to be with an Aleph, and therefore it's Meloshin Aver, like so to speak, adding limbs to the city by enlarging it before you start calculating the Torah. So all of that, so he learned only that in those 18 days. So the Gemara asks, Eini, is that so? So in all those 18 days, he was only able to learn that. Rabbi Yochanan says that Rabbi Oshia B'Revi had 12 Talmidim, 12 primary Talmidim, that is. He had lots of others. I spent 18 days growing up among them. And during that 18 days, I learned the heart of each one and the chokhmah of each one. Meaning, Rashi says, he learned for each one of those 12 Talmidim where does that particular one's sharpness, where does that particular one's charifus, what makes him sharp, and in what area in Torah is he particularly sharp? And the chokhmas kalachad b'achad, to understand in which way one is wiser than the other, and what one learned more than the other. So during those 18 times, during those 18 days, he was accomplishing a lot. Eitz Yosef brings another explanation that Lev Kalachad Vachad means the midos of each one of them. So he learned Lev and Chochmah, because first, Derech Eretz, Kodmah Torah, so first he learned the midos of each one of them, and only then he says, did I start understanding the Chochmah of each one of them. Anyway, so you see, he learned a tremendous amount during those 18 days. So the Gemara says, okay, Lev Kalachad Vachad, fine, during that time he accomplished a lot. He didn't just sit and not do anything during those 18 days, but he didn't learn things of actual Gemara, meaning to actually learn specific things of Torah from Rav Oshia, that he didn't necessarily. A second answer could be Rav Yechanan during that time learned from the 12 Talmidim, and he learned from them what they know in learning, but he didn't necessarily learn anything from Rav Oshia during that time. And a third possibility, he's focusing specifically on one thing in the Mishnah, meaning he learned from him lots of things in Brises and in Gemaras and things like that, but as far as the actual Mishnah, which by that time had been composed by Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, that he was only able to learn during those 18 days, the one thing. Tosfos printed in the Gemara, and Marsha printed over here discussed that there may have been different groups of 18 days, but the Lashon Yudches Yom Gidalti implies that there was only one bracket of 18 days during which all of this happened. The Chidah, by the way, makes a point in his Pirush Pesach Inayim. He says you find there's a Gemara at the very end of Eilam Tzitzis that says that at one point people were focusing on Mishnah exclusively and not bothering with Gemara. So Rebbe taught them the concept that you got the greatest schar for learning Gemara. So then what happened was it was the other way around. People started focusing on Gemara and neglecting Mishnah, and therefore Rebbe had to teach them as it continues over there in the Gemara. La olam havei rotz la Mishnah yosim in a Gemara. You should always be running to Mishnah. And so he says, so that relates to this over here also. So we're saying they were focusing more on Gemara, which is why during those 18 days, mostly he learned Braises and Gemaras, which is the analysis of the Mishnayos and Braises and whatnot. But to learn things in the actual Mishnah, they didn't spend very much time on, which is why during those 18 days, he only learned this one little thing. But Amr Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yochanan says also, Kshayin learned the Maidim Torah, Eitzer of Oshia Berebi, when we were learning Torah, by Rav Oshia. Now, by the way, why did he only manage 18 days? Maybe Taka, because he saw they're not learning enough of Mishnayos, and therefore we need to go to another Rebbe. It's also possible that maybe what he means, sort of like we had earlier in the Masechta, we had about Rav Meir, that first he went to learn by Rav Akiva, but he wasn't able to fully understand him, and now the Gemara is going to mention, Rav Yochanan is going to say something similar about Rav Oshia, so maybe therefore he couldn't understand him well enough, and therefore he had to go learn by somebody else, and maybe only later on, eventually, he came and then learned by him again. Anyway, so for Amr Rabbi Yochanan, Kshayinu lemedim Torah, Eitzer of Oshia Berebi, Hayinu Yoshim Dalad Dalad Ba'ama. Four of us would sit together in one Amma. If you remember the old days in 770, then you can picture it, Daka. So on the next one where it says six in an Amma, the next piece, Maharsha says it has to be a little bit of a guz, it's actually not guzma. Maharsha says it must have been a nes, where it must have been one of these examples of Mokhan Mort, Maksakas and Maruba, because how could you possibly have six people, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, fit in one Amma? And now Yosef discusses maybe what we mean is not a line of one Amma with six people sitting one next to the other, but rather we mean a square of one Amma by one Amma, and maybe they could manage it that way. And then he says also maybe what it means is something along the line that even Yaakov says that, and now Yosef makes another point. Maybe what it was is like you had almost like the bleachers in 770. You had like some people sitting higher and some people sitting lower, and therefore you could have the same amount of floor space could take a larger number of people. Anyway, so Omar Rebbe, so in a similar vein, Rebbe says, Choisi loimed Torah, it's Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua. When I was learning Torah by Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, who you didn't Yoshman Bob Bob Ba'ama, we were sitting six people to an Amma. So here's where Maharsha says that it has to have been a nest, because how could they fit in such a small space? And then you have Ion Yaakov and Anaf Yosef making their various points about how it could have been possible more B'derech HaTeva. There is, by the way, a different Gemara where Rebbe says that when he went to learn Torah by Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, he had a very hard time, he says, dealing with the Talmidim. I mean, he uses the expression, the Gemara in Yevamos, that the Talmidim, he says, Chavru alai ketanu gurvam shal base bukia. They ganged up against me like the rooster is a base bukia, where Rashi explains are very tough creatures. They don't easily allow strangers among them. And therefore, he says, all I was able to learn from Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua was one thing. So part of it may have been because of the crowding over here, they really couldn't afford to get anybody else to fit in there. But it may have also been, again, you know, if you want to be a Talmud of Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, or later on a Talmud of Rabbi Oshia, you have to be on a very high level. And maybe they felt that Rebbe and later on Rabbi Yochanan in his time are not yet on that level to be admitted into that elite circle over there. Anyway, but Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rab Oshia b'Rebbe k'dorei k'Rab Meir b'dorei. Rab Oshia b'Rebbe in his times was like Rab Meir in his times. Ma Rab Meir b'dorei like Omnu Chaver of Asayf Daitei. Earlier in the Masechta we learned about Rab Meir that it's Chaverim, the other Tanoim of his generation, could not understand the bottom of what he was getting to. We learned earlier in the Masechta that, for example, he was equally well able to argue on something that's Tomei, that's really Tahor, or vice versa, and give a good logical reason for it, and therefore, when he was arguing a point and giving rias to it, you never knew, is it really that he holds that way, or is he just doing that for argument's sake? So we learned over there, the other Chachamim learned a tremendous amount from him, in the sense that the Gemara calls him over there, Meir Eini Chachamim Ba'alacha, and Maharsha says the vote is, because even they couldn't figure out what his final opinion is, but the fact that he had clarified both possibilities so thoroughly meant that now they have a much easier time of understanding and getting to the bottom of it. Nevertheless, though, they couldn't understand, they couldn't figure out Al-Seif Daita, which is why in many cases, Ba'alacha is not like him. So now, Rabbi Yochanan says, after Rabbi Oshia, Rabbi Le'om Duchaber of Asayf Daito. It's the same thing with Rabbi Oshia. His Chaberim couldn't always understand what his actual opinion was, the same as Rabbi Meir in his times. V'om Rabbi Yochanan, and further Rabbi Yochanan says in this connection, to give you an idea of the concept of Yeridas HaDoros and how the generations deteriorate over time, Liban Shal Rishonim Kepiskei Shal Ulam, the heart, meaning the ability to understand Torah, of the earlier generations was like the entrance of the ulam. The ulam is the entryway to the heichal. It was an open doorway that was 40 by 20 amos. So their ability to be able to absorb Torah was comparable to that. The one of the later generations, and the Gemara is going to describe in a second who are the earlier and the later generations in this context, is Kepischa Shel Heichel. They were only like the doorway of the Heichel, which is 20 by 10. So a quarter of the size, half the width and half the length. Earlier in the Masechta, we had about the scroll that contains Torah Shebaal Peh, which the Gemara said over there that Eov described, that David HaMelech describes it in Tilim Rechova Mitzvos Kamaoid, and Eov describes it, Eov, one of Eov's friends, whatever, describes it, Arucha Meretz Nido Rechova Minyam, and Yechezkel describes it in more detail, and Zechariah describes it in the most detail of all, and it comes out from that. The Gemara says that the whole written surface area of it is 40 by 20 amos. So Marsha over there in Madura Basra explains that relates to all Gemara over here. The earlier generations were able to absorb and to understand the entire Torah Shebaal Peh, the entire 40 by 20 space, the entire 800 square amos space of Torah Shebaal Peh, whereas the later generations are only able to absorb half of that, representing where we had over there in that Gemara where it was folded over. You have a front and a back and it's folded over, so the later generations are only able to absorb only a small part of it, only a quarter of it. The Onu, and he continues, as far as us, Kimloy Nekev Machat Sidkis, by us, the opening for our understanding of Torah is only like the size of the hole made by a needle of Sidkis. So Rashi describes the word Sidkis comes from the word Sedek, which means a crack. So when you have a little rip or crack in a garment and you sew it up with a very fine needle, that's the kind of tiny hole that fine needle makes. Rabbi Yochanan is saying relative to those earlier generations is how much is the little ability that we have to absorb Torah compared to them. The Maharav gives an explanation. Well, first, man Rishonim, Rabbi Akiva. Who do we mean by Rishonim in this regard? We mean Rabbi Akiva. Achronim then would be Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. Now, Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua was a Talmud, was one of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. So we see how Rabbi Yochanan is saying just in one generation, it went down so precipitously. The Ikad Amri, Rishonim, Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, Achronim, Rabbi Oshia Berebi. Others say that Rishonim refers to Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. The Achronim then refers to Rabbi Oshia Berebi, who was about two generations later. V'ono can learn that to Machat Sidkis. And again, he says we compared to them are only like a tiny hole made by a needle. The Maharal makes a point that the normal size of an entryway should be 10 amos wide. We actually had at the beginning of the Masechta that the Gemara discussed in some detail. We have it in connection with the halachas of Erevin and Mavoyas and other such things, that normally an entry wider than 10 amos is not considered a doorway, it's considered a breach. You have that in community Erevin, city Erevin, or whatever, for example, if you have a gap in it of 10 amos or wider, then you have a problem. So therefore he says that the doorway of the heichal, which is 10 amos wide, that represents the normal amount, so to speak, what you would expect. To have a doorway as wide as the door of the ulam represents something beyond any of those limitations, and therefore we're saying the Rishonim, the earlier generations, had that. They had not only were they didn't just have a doorway, they had something even wider that could be considered a breach, something completely beyond any limitations. The later generations then are only at the level of a regular doorway, 10 amos, and then Rabbi Yochanan is saying in his generation, they're down to just, they're only able to make like a tiny hole through which the light of Torah can come. So the Gemara continues, Amar Abaya, so Abaya who lived in the generation after Rabbi Yochanan, he says, Ba'anan, as far as us, after Rabbi Yochanan's times, he sticks a beguda the Gemara. Regarding learning Gemara, regarding being able to analyze what it says in the Mishnayos and the Braises and be able to figure it out, it's like sticking a peg into a wall. So Rashi describes if you have a small hole, a hole just big enough for the peg, then you have to really jam the peg in very tightly and it just barely goes in. The same way, it's very hard for us to understand, and we only understand a little bit of what we're learning, and even that comes with great difficulty. And Rabba says, as far as Svara, meaning Gemara is more, it is the analysis of what you're learning, but Gemara is more what you learned from your Rebbe. Svara is more when you come up with Svaras of your own. So Marashor explains, Abaya and Rava are both in the same generation, but Abaya is referring to Gemara, meaning what you learned from your Rebbeim, that Abaya is saying we have a very hard time absorbing and remembering it. So only like putting that peg or that nail into the wall, you really have to whack it a lot like a hammer in order to get it into the wall. Rava, meanwhile, is talking about svara, when a person figures out with his own svara, out of his own mind, a svara in what he's learning. So Rava says that's even harder, that's ki etzba also the kilo of the svara, that's like putting a finger into wax. When you have hard wax, if you try to stick your finger into it, it only like makes a tiny little dent. Maybe a little bit of the wax sticks to your finger. So Rava's saying that's the kind of way we are as far as svara of Torah. Amr of Ashi, and Rav Ashi says, "Va'anan ki etzba also the beir of a shitcha." On the other hand, when it comes to forgetting, we're like a finger stuck into a hole in the ground, stuck into a well or a pit in the ground, which is huge, and the finger will go in there very easily. The same way, it's very easy for us to forget what we learned. So the Maharal explains, in other words, that the metaphor behind this, for example, at least the peg in the wall, you put it in, it may be very hard to get it in, but once it's there, it stays in there. As opposed to in wax, apparently the Maharal learns, not like Rashi, that we're talking about hard wax, he seems to understand, we're talking about softer wax, you can more easily wiggle your finger around in it, therefore representing that when it comes to svara, it's very easy. You might come up with the right svara, but you might equally well come up with the wrong svara. You might come up with a kluma svara or something, and you don't even realize it because it's like fit your finger in wax when you're wiggling it this way and that, and you don't realize what the correct place is. And then Rav Ashi is saying that when it comes to forgetting, then it's like if you stick your finger into a well, your finger is not even touching the well, therefore representing like we don't even have the ability to touch really the pinimius of Torah at all and be able to understand it, and therefore we forget it very quickly. So he continues, Kayotzi was at Masechta Shabbos, part of the Elektron and Mizera Loshona. There's a Gemara relevant to this in Shabbos. So he didn't bring it over here. So when we learned Shabbos in Yaakov over here, he didn't bring it over there. Instead, he brings it over here in connection with this point about Yuridus Adonis, where it says, Amar of Zero, Rava Bar Zimona, Im Rishonim Bnei Malachim, if the earlier generations were like Bnei Malachim, where Onu Bnei Adam, then we're regular people compared to them. The Im Rishonim Bnei Anoshim, and if the earlier generations are considered like Bnei Anoshim, like regular humans, Onu Kachamurim, then we are compared to them just like donkeys. The loyta chamurda should Rav Chanina ben Dosa, the Shalom Pinchas ben Yer, and not even like the donkeys of Rav Chanina ben Dosa. We have a story in the Gemara in Tainis where one time some people had rented the donkey and then accidentally left a pair of shoes on it and the donkey wouldn't move until they took it off. And the Pinchas ben Yer, we have the whole story where Ganovim stole his donkey and then they offered it barley and it wouldn't eat. And it turned out in the air, maybe it's people had rented the donkey, whatever it was anyway, and the donkey wouldn't eat because the grain wasn't maiser. So those donkeys at least have a certain understanding of right and wrong, at least some kind of instinctive understanding that they were at their level. But rather, if we're going to say that we're like donkeys, then we mean like just regular run-of-the-mill donkeys, that kind. There's a vort on that that says that there's a vort on that that's brought from Rabbi Akiva Eger and from various other achronim that says the vort of why do we have to give this double analogy is if we consider the Rishonim to be like Malachim, then we at least have the right to be considered Bnei Anoshim. But if we think of them as only Bnei Anoshim, as regular human beings with all the foibles and all the things that we can say negative about them, then we deserve to be called only Chamorim. Getting back to the Gemara here in Eidavin. So continuing on this topic, we said before that Rebbe had asked the people, had asked the Chachamim, what is the correct Girsay in our Mishnah? Is it supposed to be Ma'abrin with an Ayin or Ma'abrin with an Aleph? Where we said at the beginning, Rab and Shmuel all get about it. So the Gemara mentions that the Bnei Yehuda and Bnei Golo themselves, among them, argued about it also. One group said it was Ma'abrin with an Ayin and the other Ma'abrin with an Aleph. You have to realize, by the way, the Mishnayos, many Mishnayos existed long before Rebbe's times. When we say that Rebbe composed or compiled or wrote Mishnayos, doesn't mean that he's starting from scratch. He had before him collections of Mishnayos that go back long before him, some of them even back to the Anshe Knesset HaGdolah. So what he was doing is he's sifting among them and deciding which ones are going to be kept as part of the Mishnah and which ones are going to be relegated to Blaisis. Which Lashon are we going to use? And in general, he picks Rav Meir's Lashon because of his Derech Tzara. It's the shortest and most succinct way of expressing the halachas. And deciding, for example, when we have a machlokas tanoyim on the subject, when should we present the machlokas as is versus when should we say the chachamim omim to imply that the halacha is like that, and then the Gemara will often tell us man chachamim. So all that kind of editorial work is what Rebbe did, but a lot of Mishnayos existed before him. So here, by the same token, there was a Mishnah before him that said this din, ketzav me'abrin asarim, so Rebbe himself is not sure of the two versions that were going around, which one is the correct. So now, having mentioned B'nai Yehuda and B'nai Golil, the Gemara mentions more on that topic of the difference between them in how they express themselves and how they lived. Amar of Yehuda, Amar Rav, B'nai Yehuda sheikpidu al lashonam, the people of Yehuda who were very precise with their lashon, they would be very careful, as the Gemara is going to give examples soon, of they would be very careful to express themselves in a very clear and unequivocal way. Niskaima Torah in the Yodan, therefore their Torah was preserved by them. They were able to remember their Torah. B'nei Golil, Shaloi Hikpidu al Lashonam. On the other hand, the B'nei Golil, who were not so careful as far as how they expressed themselves, as the Gemara is going to give examples soon, they would slur their words, or they wouldn't make sure to, they wouldn't take care to make sure that what they're saying is so unequivocally understandable. So, Loi Niskaima, Torah in the Yodan, therefore their Torah was not preserved by them, they ended up forgetting it. So the Gemara asked Midibek, hey, the Talia Milsa, I understand that B'nai Yehuda were careful with their Lashon and B'nai Golil less so, but since when does learning Torah, since when does Niskaima Torah in the Yodan have to do with how precise a person is in his speech? What does one have to do with the other? Ella, no, what it means is B'nai Yehuda, mitoich sheikpidu al lashonam, because they were very precise with their Lashon, and that means Abu Daiki Lishna. They were very careful, not just with the way they expressed themselves in mundane matters, as the Gemara is going to give an example soon, but it means when they learned Torah, they were very careful to use the exact same wording that they had learned from their debate. Umat nechilahu simani, and they would make themselves simanim, because since they were very precise on the Lashon, therefore they were able to make themselves simonim, that afterwards they would be able to remember. And the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, simonim aseba Torah, upnei osa, that a good way to acquire and retain Torah is to make simonim in it. So therefore, so they did that. And therefore, so Niskai and Talmud and Biyad, and therefore their Torah was preserved by them because they were able to remember based on the simonim. B'nai Golil, Zolai Daikin Lishna, but the people of the Golil, who were the north of Eretz Yisrael, who were not so precise in their speech, which means also, therefore, they weren't so careful when they told over a teaching in Torah to make sure they told it over in the original Lashon, therefore, Zolai Matna L'chol Simani, so therefore they couldn't make themselves Simani, because what good would the Simon do if they don't remember the exact words, Loi Niskayin Talmud and Miyadan, therefore their learning was not preserved by them. Another way of looking at it, another difference between Yehuda and Golil, B'nai Yehuda Gamni Mechad Rabba, the people of Yehuda learnt exclusively from one Rebbe. Niskaima Terosim Yodam, therefore their Torah was preserved by them, because the Rebbe would always use, a person tends to stick to certain expressions, every individual person has their own way of expressing themselves, so when you learn by one Rebbe, then he always says, whichever things it is, he uses the same kind of expressions, and therefore that helps fix it in your head. B'nei Golil de la Gamri Mechad Rabba, but the B'nei Golil who did not, they learned from different Rebbeim, and everyone has a different style of speaking, so therefore that itself would confuse them. Therefore, Lo Niskayin Torah in the Yodam, therefore their Torah was not so preserved by them, and they ended up forgetting it. Tosfos points out now there is a difference between, here we're talking about learning as in learning the facts, meaning, for example, learning the Mishnayos and the basic facts and things like that. Those are important to learn from one Rebbe, again, so that you have a clear Lashon. When it comes to Svara, that we said before, you also have, once you've learned the basics, you need to have Svara. You need to do your own logical analysis to be able to derive new halachas and new insights. There, Adrabah, Tosfos quotes from Gemara and Avodah Zarah, that says if a person sticks to one Rebbe for that, then he's not going to see a Simon Bracha in his learning. For that, you need different Rebbeim, because every Rebbe has a different style of Svara, and therefore when you learn from different Rebbeim, then you pick up different styles of analyzing what you've learned, and being able to come up with new Chiddushim. The Gemara says, Ravina says there's another difference between the B'nai Yehuda and the B'nai Golil. B'nai Yehuda de Golil Masechta. the people of Yehuda were Golu Masechta. Now, what does that mean? So Rashi says two explanations. One is it means they didn't just learn Torah themselves, they taught other people Torah as well. A second explanation, Rashi says, is when they taught other people, they would be careful to explain it to them very clearly until the other person could thoroughly understand it. So that's the second possibility of what Golu Masechta is. So that's one. Maharsha gives another explanation. They were careful. They always made it. They always made a point, as much as possible, of trying to teach al libe d'hilchsa, of teaching in a way from which you'll be able to understand the practical halach, not just learning in a theoretical way. And then the Meiri gives another explanation of Golu Masechta, means they would announce ahead of time. The Meiri, also of Yaakov Emden, says in his notes on this Gemara, he says Golu Masechta means they would announce ahead of time what topic they're going to be learning. Because that way the Talmidim would come prepared. They're able to look it over in advance. They're able to come up with good questions and so forth. And therefore the whole topic becomes very well clarified by that. So the Bnei Yehuda had these various advantages. Therefore, their learning was preserved in their hands. The Bnei Golo, who did not do whichever of these things, then their learning was not so preserved by them, and they tended to forget it. An example also in Jewish history of the difference between Goli Masechta and not, David Goli Masechta, Shola Goli Masechta. David was Goli Masechta in any of these things, teaching others and making sure that others understand it well, and teaching al libe d'hilchsa and so forth. So David did that. Shaul, like Goli Masechta, Shaul did not do that when he learned or when he taught her. So David, Goli Masechta, Ksibbe, Yere Echa, Yeruni V'Yismachu. So on him, he says, on Tillim, on himself, the Pasuk, those who fear you, Hashem, will see me, and they will be happy, because they're able to understand from him, they're able to learn from him, al libe d'hilchsa. Maharsha refers over here to a Gemara in Yoma that says that the special ability to be able to come out with Shmaita al libe d'hilchsa, to be able to learn Torah in a way that you can understand practical halacha from it, that specifically the Gemara over there says that that kind of talent you find mainly by Shevet Yehuda or by Shevet Levi. So David being from Shevet Yehuda, then he had that quality. So, and for that matter, the Bnei Yehuda, we're saying the Bnei Yehuda, the Pashtos, are the descendants of people who, so you have, and when they came to build the second Beis Hamikdash, you only had Shevet Yehuda and Binyamin and small numbers of the other Shvatim, but the Pasuk describes that everybody settled in their ancestral cities, so therefore the Pashtos, the Jews who lived in Yehuda, for the most part were Jews from Shevet Yehuda, as opposed to the Jews who lived in the Galil, were the Pashtos mostly from other Shvatim. So again, the Bnei Yehuda had that special siyata d'shmaya to be able to teach al libe d'hilchsa. On the other hand, Shaul, like Gali Masechta, when Shaul was saying was not Gali Masechta, according to whatever these definitions, k'sivei uvachola shegifne yarshia, on him the Pasuk says, wherever he turned, yarshia. Now, in context of the Pasuk, what it means is that it describes how Shaul is fighting against various enemies of the Jewish people in and around Eretz Yisrael, and wherever he went, Yarshia, he would make them fearful and terrorize them. The word Rosha, we know what a Rosha means, but sometimes that Shodash Rosha means actually just to be fearful and trembling and nervous. We have, in fact, interestingly, the Meiri in his commentary on Tillim, he says the first pasuk of Tillim, Asher Eish Shalai Alach Batzas Rishoyim, he says the Rishoyim over there don't necessarily mean Rishoyim as in people who are violating the Torah. It may mean these kinds of nervous people who think that they have to do whatever they can to get ahead in life. So Asher Eish, who doesn't do that and realizes to have bitachon Hashem. Anyway, so in context, the pasuk is saying that Shaul would terrify all his enemies. But here, the Gemara is taking it in the sense that wherever he turned in Torah, Yahushua, he would always go wrong because he's not coming out a libe d'hilchsa. He's coming out with nice ideas in Torah, but not in the way where it comes out in consonance with practical halacha. In fact, there's Gemara in Sanhedrin that tells us that when Doeg is introducing David to Shaul, he mentions David's various qualities in order to make Shaul jealous of him, and one of the qualities he mentions is Hashem Imoy, meaning the Gemara says Shalocha Imoy B'chol Mokim, that the Shalocha Kamosa B'chol Mokim, that David always knows how to come up with the correct conclusion of Yalocha, and the Gemara says that's really what incited Shaul's jealousy against him, because Shaul didn't have that quality, as we're saying over here. since we're mentioning Shoal, though, by the way, the Gemara says, "V'amar Rav Yechon, minayin shemochalei Hakadosh Baruch Hu al oisei oven l'shoal." How do we know that Hashem forgave Shoal for the avera of wiping out Noiv Irakoyanim? Shenema, because you have when he went to the Eishes Balas Oiv, to the witch over there, and to bring up Shoal's spirit and to bring up Shmuel's spirit and ask him what's going to be with that battle with the Plishtim that's going to take place the next day. So Shmuel tells him, "You and your sons are going to be killed in battle." But he says, "Mochar ato vanecha imi, tomorrow you and your sons will be with me," which means imi v'mchitzasi. So Shmuel was saying, "You'll be together with me in my mechitza, in my area of Gan Eden." So in fact, the Gemara in Brachas mentions that we see from this that when a person is embarrassed of an avera that he did, then Hashem forgives him for that avera. Because being embarrassed of it, of course, is part of the trouble for it. Because we find over there in that story, it says when Shaul, before he went to the witch over there, he asked the Urim B'Tumim, he asked the Nevi'im, he asked people in Shaila to ask the Shaila Scholem, and nothing, he's not getting any answer, and therefore, in desperation, he goes to her. But when he's speaking to Shmuel, and Shmuel asks him, "What do you think you're doing, bringing me up over here?" So Shaul mentions, "I asked the Nevi'im and the Chalomis," he doesn't say anything about the Urim B'Tumim. Why? The Gemara says, because he was embarrassed. If he mentions the Urim B'Tumim, then Shmuel's going to tell him, "Well, you wiped out Noiv Irakoyanim. What do you expect? Of course you're not going to get an answer from the Urim B'Tumim." So the fact that he was embarrassed on that shows that Hashem helped him have a kapara for that, and therefore Shmuel tells him, "Mocher ato v'nechayim." So we see that Hashem forgave him for that he's able to be on the level of Shmuel in Gan Eden. In fact, Ben Yehoyada says it's not just a by-the-way thing, having mentioned Shoal, then we want to mention this point. It's also, since we just said of Cholash Yifnei Yarshia, that Shoal was never able to come up with the correct conclusion of Halacha, so what are you going to think? Does that mean he actually misled people in Halacha? So therefore, the Gemara stresses for us that no, in fact, he was a great tzaddik, and Hashem wouldn't allow something like that to happen through him, and he does have a place with Shmuel and Ben-Yi. To be continued tomorrow, Best Hashem. Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ula, Yudalad Tammuz. Since the Rebbe says this generation is the last generation of Golos and the first generation of Ge'ula, so we have a special stress in our generation on the avoda of the Jewish people to be mashpia on the nations of the world as far as everything of goodness and justice and righteousness, which is through keeping Shem Nitzimaneya. And that will bring very soon the fulfillment of the Nevuah, Oz Epechalam, Sofa Brura, then will of the Shemacha, that all the nations will have one clear language and will all serve Hashem shoulder to shoulder. And as the Rambam says at the end of the Sefer, that Loya Esa Koloilam, I will adas Hashem Bovad, the whole occupation of the whole world will be to know only Hashem, because Mala or Deas Hashem, Kamayim La Yom Machasa. So by working on Shem Mesitanayah, then we help bring that closer. Continuing on Halachas of Nidorim Ushvurs. So far we were talking about when a person should and shouldn't make a neder. The default is not to make a neder, but there are certain exceptional cases. So now you also have a person makes a neder in order to correct his midas. So for example, let's say a person was a glutton. He's always gorging himself on meat. So he makes a neder not to eat meat for a certain period of time, or he gets drunk and swearing off wine for a while. Or other wine, mashkin, whatever. Or, for example, you have an example from the story, a story in a Gemara in Midorim and Nazir of a guy who was very handsome, and then his Yetzirah started getting him to be very proud of his looks, and he takes on himself Nazirus. Those kinds of things, those kinds of Midorim, are part of Avodah of Hashem. This is the kind of thing where it says in Pirkei Avos, Midorim siog l'prishus, that a neb, that Midorim are a fence around prishus against, separating oneself from things that are also. Nevertheless, even with such nedarim, a person shouldn't get himself too used to that as much as possible. He should avoid nedarim and separate himself from these things without nedarim. There's actually a sikha someplace where the Rebbe talks about you have different levels within that. You have a level where a person needs to make a neder, you have a higher level where a person doesn't need to make a neder, and you have the highest level of all, which is that he can actually use the thing and use it in the right way for Avodas Hashem, and then the whole concept of nedarim doesn't even need to apply to such a person. Another din, nedarim are only chal, only if piv v'libo shavim. A person makes a neder by mistake, so he meant to say one thing, and he said something else, or if he only thought the neder, then it's not considered a neder. There is, by the way, as far as that thinking and not being considered a neder, there is an exception to that with Zucca and with Hekdesh, where there, even if a person just thinks it, then to a certain extent it's already chal. But other than that, most nedarim, a person has to speak out verbally and have in mind what he meant to say in order for it to be a valid neder.